why Indiana scheduled who they did. Well, we know FIU was an old contract they had to get rid of. They got rid of a new contract, and that's how Western Illinois came about. But what's the aggregate now? 108-10
10, yeah.
That should.
Yeah, all you
that's
can,
what
I mean,
it should be,
it
right?
It is the classic, like, all you can do is beat what's in front of you.
You can only play the teams on your schedule, but you make
yes,
that schedule.
Yes, Indiana put Western Illinois on there, and yes, Western Illinois is you know one of the worst football teams in Division One. I don't think anybody's disputing that. But, again, you can only beat what's in front of you. And what I would also say is I don't think – I mean, certainly the FIU game, I think we discussed that last week. It wasn't like Indiana was clicking on all cylinders. But even the Western Illinois game, it didn't feel like Indiana was out there trying to make a statement. You know, they weren't – I mean, they started running the ball after a while.
And no one could tackle.
They were throwing the ball with their second team, but that's because that's the sort of game where you make sure your second teamers get some throws, some catches, some tackles, some PBUs. You want those guys to have some time on the field, not in the controlled setting of practice, not when you might know what's coming, not when you're familiar with the offenses or defenses, checks or calls, but when it's live bullets against somebody you've never seen before. So that way, you know, the obvious example is quarterback. If Indiana's playing Washington late third quarter, up six, and Curtis Rourke feels a tweak in his shoulder and they got to go to Taven Jackson, it's not the first time all season Taven Jackson's thrown a ball in anger. And I thought he looked good. I thought obviously Rourke looked good.
What were the quarterback numbers? 19 to 20? 18 to 20?
They were only, they only missed two passes all night between them, between the three of them, because Mendoza threw, I think, one pass as well.
Stop right there real quickly, because someone asked me that. What do I read into that Mendoza's playing in front of Cherry?
Maybe Mendoza's ahead of Cherry. I mean, that's what I would read into it.
The insider for the Indy
I would
Star.
Also say, like,
that's Zach Osterman.
I mean, I'm not going to ask Kurt Cignetti who his third string quarterback
doesn't
is.
Doesn't matter.
You know, like,
you're right.
That's not that important. And they're both true freshmen, so you know that either one of them is going to need some work. I would say, too.
And we knew we were going to blow out Western Illinois, and you thought maybe you'd see both of them.
You're going to have – well, I think Cherry did get some snaps, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think he threw a pass, but I think he got some snaps. Mike Nieslick told me he got snaps.
If Nies told you that, he goes through that with a fine-tooth comb, so I believe him. Okay.
I'd also point out that the staff has had Cherry since January, but it's known Mendoza longer.
Facts.
So there's an element there of, like, sort of – you know, who do you think is maybe more ready today? Who are you more familiar with today? And yes, you know, time on task with Tyler Cherry. Basically, what I'm trying to say is stop worrying if you are about a true freshman third or fourth string quarterback. If you get that far, some other stuff's gone wrong. So, like, you know, this is the advantage of having a more.
We call this the Grant Gremmel drill.
Sort of ordered quarterback room where you have the sixth year senior and then the third year sophomore, and then you can kind of protect the freshman. Again, all you can do is beat what's in front of you. Obviously, if you're going to put up a record number, it really doesn't matter who you're playing. A record's a record, and Indiana's never scored that many points in a game before. And again, I would also point out Indiana got to a point where it was scoring those points with freshmen everywhere. Freshman quarterback, freshman wide receiver on the sweep, freshman linebacker picking it off and running it back, freshman linebacker creating a fumble that I think a freshman defensive back or a defensive lineman fell onto. The point is, at a certain point, it stops being, oh, look at Indiana beating up on poor, defenseless Western Illinois. And it starts being, no matter who Indiana's putting on the field, they're performing. That suggests a level of preparation and confidence throughout the entire roster. It doesn't do that anything more for you than that. You know,
provide you some more film.
Those games are just the warm-ups for these games that we're going to talk about here. But it's all you can do. Indiana did it well. Kurt Cignetti was clearly pleased, I think it's fair to say, with the progress from week one to week two. And now, obviously, week three turns in a big one.
You're worried about the schedule. Don't be, because the way it's set up, why wouldn't you want to be as confident as possible going on the road for the first time in this era, going on the road for a Big Ten opponent, going on the road
first Pac-12,
to the Rose Bowl?
First Big Ten game for a Pac-12 team. Do you know that?
Ever.
I didn't realize that till this morning.
Yeah.
This is the first Big Ten game for any of those four.
It's the first Big Ten game. It's the first time Indiana's played UCLA ever. It is UCLA's first Big Ten game ever. Yes, this is a very historical day, and you don't go out there ice cold after a bye week or you played week zero and had a bye week. Now you've got a foundation. But you know what? You still got to get on the plane. You still got to go to Indianapolis and get on the plane. You still got to get to California. You still got to adjust the time. Still got to do all that. We'll get to UCLA here in a minute. But anything to take away from those numbers? I know it was 11 touchdowns and 11 extra points and 77 total. But you ran for over three. You passed for over three.
I would be encouraged by, in particular, I think two things. Number one, the run game, just because I think we all thought, oh, Indiana's going to pass the ball all over the place. And again, I imagine it's going to get harder to run the ball. But the fact that you've got all four backs involved, three of them have scored a touchdown, two of your quarterbacks have scored a touchdown, six different players rushed for a touchdown on Friday night. The fact that you're – I mean, I think Mike told me that Indiana's only a couple touchdowns off its entire total from last season. And, or maybe it was either that, or it's only Indiana's only a couple touchdowns off of its entire total in any one of the last three seasons, something like that. Like, I mean, the ground game is already productive at a level that it has not been for a while.
Now that's the
and
point.
And you got a lot of guys doing it. You're not throwing 35 carries on one guy. That you're splitting it up. Lawton led the team week one. Ellison led the team week two. So I think you feel encouraged by that. I think you feel encouraged by, you know, Cignetti talked about, you know, when you have momentum, when you have a lead, you can't let up. And, you know, I think the point he was trying to make after the FIU game is it didn't hurt you in a game like this, but it will hurt you if you do that. If you score a couple quick touchdowns, you're feeling good about yourself, and suddenly you get complacent at Michigan State, at UCLA, then it will hurt you. I think he was pleased with the fact that Indiana – started scoring and didn't stop against Western Illinois. It was just sort of, you know, it was just one after another, drives of all kinds, drives that took a few plays, convert some third downs, drives that were literally just one shot over the top to a wide open receiver. But the point was, you know, Indiana scored on 9 of its first 10 drives. The only one it didn't, it intentionally took a knee to run at the half. I think that encourages a coach who asked his team to play with a little bit more urgency and a little bit less, oh, we scored some points. We're clearly better than this team. We can just get a little complacent, foot off the gas, and win, you know, win 42 to nothing and no one will care. The other thing, I've been banging this drum pretty much all offseason. 10 sacks, first team in the conference to 10 sacks. Sacks aren't the end-all be-all. Obviously, that number will slow down. On a per-game basis, I don't think Indiana's going to end the season with 65 sacks, including a bowl game.
Jamie Curlew ain't walking through that door.
But it's encouraging that the identity that it seemed like sort of defined James Madison's defenses, stop the run and create havoc plays. James Madison was second in the country 2 years ago in rushing yards allowed per game and tackles for loss per game. Last season, first in the country in both those statistics. That idea of like controlling the front, creating some havoc, getting TFLs, getting sacks, creating negative plays, that was, in the same way that we talked about turnovers, really defined what Tom Allen was trying to achieve defensively. That is what it feels like this defense is designed to achieve under Bryant Haynes. And again, it's going to get harder. You're not going to have 5 sacks a game. But the fact that through these first 2 weeks, you see a lot of different guys come to the party, a lot of different guys with at least a half a sack or at least a half a tackle for loss, whatever, and you see a defense that seems like it's embracing that as its identity. This is the thing we do. This is our way home. This is our style that makes a difference in the, you know, in all the games. I think you're encouraged by that, and I think that's one of the things that probably I will be looking at as much as anything against UCLA. I know they had, Kurt Cignetti pointed out, they did not have the 2 tackles at Hawaii.
They did not.
They threw the ball okay.
Second half, really good.
Yeah, but still 2 picks and 50% completion
rate. 2 picks were in the first half.
And 50% completion on 38 attempts is not great.
He was 6 of 17 in the first half.
But 270-something through the air is a perfectly sound number. They did not run the ball well. And I think that is something that UCLA, my impression from seeing sort of the engagement on Twitter and things, and Twitter's not real life, and these are
Ethan Garbers was 6 of 18 for 68 yards and 2 picks in the first half. Second half, he was 13 of 20 for 204 and a touchdown.
Yeah.
So day and night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to throw that
out
there so we get
an idea. It seems like their fans, again, it's anecdotal, it's Twitter, social media is not real, yada, 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 but it does seem like there's some concern about the run game. So this is the kind of game where that sort of defensive identity, in theory, should should click, should you know, mesh. And then the other overriding thing
we'll
you have
get to
in this
UCLA
is,
after the break, but yes,
the other overriding thing numbers. You know the about this matchup to me is you have two teams coming at an important early season game from different directions. One played an underwhelming game
on the road.
On the road,
big deal for me. Big deal.
Yeah, maybe.
That's
mean,
a
Hawaii,
big road trip.
Hawaii is a funky one with the distance. The time change isn't going to be as bad for UCLA. It's only 2 hours. It's not 4 or 5, so it's not quite as extreme as you know you get with like the when IU or Duke goes to the Maui Invitational or something like that. But it is a long way to go. It's you know. It's a weird just kind of setup, like the stadium's out in this.
Your first game with a new head coach and a new offensive coordinator and was on the road.
Yeah. They did not play well, though, against a not very
in
good
the second
Hawaii
half,
team.
They did not. They played much better than they did in the first
half.
Yeah.
They still only scored a touchdown and 2 field goals. All I'm saying is, like, they weren't – they didn't just click into gear and light it on fire.
Completely
like they just,
right.
They just – they were down 10-0. They came back to win 16-13. Then they have the week off. They've got more film on Indiana than vice versa. On the other hand, Indiana's got both the confidence of having played well and also two of these games where we've talked about go make some mistakes.
I'm gonna ask you about this.
Go be less than your best. Go work through some things. Go grow through some pains. And then
well, let's go back to Western lessons. Illinois for just a minute because we'll hit the break. Then we'll get into UCLA in the next half hour. UCLA did kick a field goal under a minute left to win. They've been in a pressure situation. Indiana has not been. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an interesting if it is close down the road. Indiana's favored in this game, and they have to be, and we'll talk about that as well. Penalties were an issue in week one. Did that get cleaned up against Western Illinois to the satisfaction of the head ball coach?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I didn't see 1,000 flags. Well, I didn't see the final number.
This comes back to, like, I just think you've played sports. I've played sports. In any sport, you know, your first game is probably going to be one of your worst ones in a season. You've been waiting all offseason.
Correct.
It's hype. It's nerves. It's whatever else. If I told you in any team sport, you can play one game, same amount of rest. You know, you get the whole week, you're in the rhythm, all that. I'm not asking you to play two games back-to-back or anything. But you can play one game as a warm-up for one of the biggest, potentially one of the biggest games of the first half of your season, or two games as a warm-up. You're saying two every
Absolutely.
Time. Because you want more time. You want to get more of the jitters out. You want to correct mistakes. You want to figure out little bits. Maybe you find something you didn't know you had. Maybe Indiana only thought they had two effective running backs, and now they think, well, we got three, maybe 3.5 if Elijah Green keeps coming along. Maybe Anderson Kobe, you know, he wasn't necessarily a receiver that a lot of us thought was going to be heavily involved here in the first, you know, few weeks of the season, and yet he hits for a deep shot against Western Illinois, and Kurt Cignetti comes out and says, actually, we probably should hit him for at least one against FIU, too. He adds a different dynamic. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I'd rather be Indiana than UCLA, but, you know, you talked about the betting line. I think it's, what, 2.5, 3, somewhere in there.
Depends on your book, right?
Point is, it's tight. You know, nobody sees this as a clear slant one way or the other. And so it is going to be the kind of game where you need to be able to maximize those small margins, especially probably early on, because I think that's where maybe Indiana has the advantage. Indiana's knocked more rust off. If UCLA is still a little bit stuttering and stumbling out of the gate, if they start slow like they did at Hawaii, well, if you're Indiana and they start slow and you're more in rhythm, then what if you're up 24-3 at halftime? And then it's like, well, they can play as well as they want in the second half. All it takes is one or two scores, and Indiana probably puts the game away. So I'd rather be Indiana, but I think it's going to be a tight game. It's going to be fascinating.
And we will talk in the details of UCLA and Indiana. And I've forgotten the last two times we've spoken, 9-win Indiana, as Zach Osterman has written in the Indianapolis Star. You will tell me how we will get to such a number as well. Indiana against Western Illinois, 0 interceptions, 0 fumbles lost, and only 2 penalties, down from what, 9, 10?
It was 9, 7 on the offense, 1 defense, 1 special
teams.
In week
number 1. So, yes, you should have played better. They did play better, and they mopped the floor with the Leathernecks. So what's going to translate from what we've seen in the first 2 weeks against UCLA? We'll let you know about the opponent a little bit as well and see what happens on the road, which, again, We're going to have a lot of firsts in this game. First game with UCLA in the Big Ten. First time Indiana playing UCLA ever in the history of sports in the football realm. A lot of first everythings. First road trip. The list goes on and on. So we'll get to that with Zach Osterman from the Indy Star after we get to Diane Daly's news headlines. This is the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour on a Thursday afternoon. Your Money with David Hayes will follow us in Thursday Night Football. Buffalo and Miami starts at 7:30. A great place to watch that on a Thursday night. Yeah, the Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood. They're open at 11 o'clock daily for lunch, dinner, or late night. Great daily drink and food specials. And you can enjoy all the football all weekend long and brunch on the weekends. All right, welcome back. Glass in the afternoon. Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star riding shotgun today. He'll be back with us tomorrow. Big show Friday as well. We'll do football Friday. Get you ready for all of the big games in the Big Ten and the National Football League. Tough news from Colts camp today. No Buckner, no Blackman. The fulcrums of each layer of, well, there's three layers, one on the defensive line, one in the defensive secondary. Now, Buckner's done this before. He doesn't need to practice. He has proved everything he needs to prove. So if they're just saving him, Steichen told you first thing when he walked into the press tent after Sunday's loss to Houston was Buckner's, he's got a back deal. So we didn't know anything about Juju Brents and his MCL. It's going to need surgery. There wasn't any mention about Blackman. The kicker could be back. He's practiced the last 2 days, and Josh Downs has been limited. Colts, Packers, noon on Sunday. Osterman is here. Hoosiers and Bruins. UCLA, 7:30, the Rose Bowl Stadium in lovely Pasadena, California. That means the tailgate. Our Hoosier football kickoff show will start at 6:30. IU, UCLA, NBC, National TV. 9-win Indiana takes it on the road, baby. There you go, REO Speedwagon out to California. The Hoosiers leaving from Indianapolis, which suggests to me they're taking a bigger airplane than they usually take. That's, we don't have enough runway here.
That's why it is. Now, it's they've definitely flown, I guess, I thought when they went to the Foster Farms Bowl, they flew out of Bloomington. Because I have vivid memories of them posting the videos because they got, like, I think they got two planes.
Well, if you have two planes, you're fine.
They got those planes for everybody to have, like, a stretch out, you know, in for the bowl. So, I don't, maybe they did, maybe just two smaller planes. I don't know. But, yeah, the point is to fly direct, they need to go somewhere they can be on a bigger plane.
And thankfully, that interstate is done, and it takes you 40 minutes to get to the airport like it takes you 40 or four, probably a little bit longer on the bus. Doesn't go as fast as the car, but just like any airport in any city, you got to go about 45 minutes to an hour to get to it. So that's not terribly different than all of that. Okay, it's the first road game of the Kurt Cignetti era. It's the first Big Ten game of the Kurt Cignetti era. He's been in that building before as an assistant with Alabama. That will help him. How does that translate to the rest of them? Coaches can talk, and that's what they do, all the time about this is a business trip, nothing to see here, da-da-da-da-da. They're 18 to 24-year-old kids. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. What I would say is, though, I think the best coaches do get 18 to 24-year-old kids to think that way and to just sort of suspend perspective until they can afford it.
If this was year five in the Kurt Cignetti era, I would agree with you 100%. I just don't know how tight this group of 54 new people
but
are getting reached.
The influence that the James Madison contingent seems to have had, at least outwardly, on this group is palpable to me. Like there's and I'm talking coaches and players, just the number of people that could walk into the building and from day one, just with like unflinching confidence say, hey, listen, I'm telling you, I know this guy. Like he's, you know, what he does works. Do what he says, do what he asks. I am living, breathing proof that, you know, what that his process wins. And, you know, yeah, again, just like everything else.
The unknown's scary.
Just like everything else after these first 2 weeks, it's going to get tested much more severely once you get to conference play. But it's just kind of, I don't know that Cignetti hasn't already had the ability to break through some of that. I think if that was still a great concern, I don't think you would have seen the week one to week two improvement in the fundamentals. in the basic stuff, in the stuff that's much more about focus and urgency, like penalties, like third downs, like, you know, finishing drives. And
I feel bad playing devil's advocate, but I am.
I'm not.
You don't have to hold Western Illinois' defense because they're not beating you. You don't have to jump off sides on defense because you're trying to get some advantage because they've ran 10 plays.
Like I said, that's why the first 2 weeks are only representative to a point.
What translates, though? What can you take from these that you've seen? Is it more the proof is in the pudding? You've listened to this point. We've told you to do this and this. You've won 108-10. Now it's just going to be on the road in one of the most famous football.
The other thing I would say too is like it's going to be the Rose Bowl, but there's going to be like 30,000 people there, and
five
I think
of those might be IU.
I was going to say I think a decent chunk of them are going to be Indiana fans.
You saw the IUAA tailgates already sold out there.
I think there's a reason this is the NBC game this week. This is Indiana's first NBC game since they came over in the Big Ten package. And
which was just last year.
They're going to have a studio presence out there. Like they're going to have a live set. I don't know if it's going to be the whole studio, but they're going to have a live set out. I mean, NBC is doing this big. It's Saturday night, Big Ten Saturday night is what they call it. My point is, you know, could probably have claimed one of the Pac-12 rivalry games if they wanted. There are a couple other intriguing games in the conference this week. They didn't. They chose this one. Now, yes, there's some ceremony to that. This is the first Pac-12 school playing a Big Ten game. It's the first
Indiana's
been out there since 1967, yada, yada, yada. But the point is Indiana both sells – when we talk about TV, when we talk about tickets, when we talk about, you know, all that kind of goes into what makes a football program appealing – in these kinds of settings, Indiana simultaneously sells more than I think people realize, primarily because of the size of its fan base and its alumni base and the spread of its alumni base, while also, you know, still falling short of the Iowas, the Wisconsins, the Ohio States, certainly. But, like, I don't think we'd be talking about that if this was Minnesota or Illinois. If you understand what I'm saying,
I don't think they'd be on NBC.
That's my point. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And I don't think we'd be talking about, well, there's going to be 8,000 Minnesota fans, you know, in the Rose Bowl. It's going to sound a little bit like an Indiana, like a neutral site game, you know, like a bowl game or something. I just think that the environment, yes, it will be the Rose Bowl, but I don't know if it will be that hard to get over quickly because you'll look around and you'll say it's a Rose Bowl, but it's not the Rose Bowl. Right. It's a UCLA game in a famous stadium. And that's really cool. Indiana plays in other famous stadiums. Indiana's played in Yankee Stadium. Indiana plays in Ohio Stadium every couple years. Plays at the Big House every couple years. Beaver Stadium every couple years. It's a really cool stadium, but you're going to get to kick off, and it's going to be 30% full, and it's probably not going to – I don't think anybody's going to walk out there and think, oh, my God, it's the Rose Bowl when they see the crowd, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
I'm underestimating UCLA fans, but I don't think I am.
And conversely, James Madison playing at Old Dominion in Elon is not elicting memories of big stadiums either. It's all new for everybody, and that's the terribly interesting part of all of this. And when you get on the field – and you, like you mentioned, you get on the field and you put, what was it? We used to hear blinders and earmuffs or whatever it was. You get on there and it's just football when it's all said and done. Well, this week it's going to be a little bit different football because I think the different class of athlete, recruit, et cetera. This is Big Ten football. And not a lot of people had faith in Indiana. 17th out of 18. Only Purdue was picked behind them. UCLA, I believe, was picked 15th. So to have this as the Big Ten opener on NBC is, well, that's another side of it. But the football on the field will be interesting because I think this will be the first taste of does it translate? What does it mean? Do all these transfers who are playing huge minutes, are they up to speed for this? Does the system work against this? Because we just don't know. And it's terribly, terribly fascinating. But here's what I do know. If you go on the road – and you don't turn the ball over, and you don't commit a ton of penalties, it doesn't matter who you're playing, you should be all right.
Yeah. No, that's
– And again, I think you start there with the foundation, and then you move forward. But the biggest key for me is, you know, you ran it great against Florida International. You ran it really well against Western Illinois. The front 7 of UCLA, where they've got 3 of the 4 linebackers back. They got defensive. Latu's gone. Yeah, he's playing for the Colts. I understand that.
They play a very flexible front, a very versatile front. We're talking about their size off air.
6'5", 265 and you just, is everybody you just think in the
about,
ends.
You think about the number of guys in the NFL that have come through UCLA's defense as that sort of – you mentioned Latu, that sort of tweener player that can stand up, can put their hand in the ground, can rush – can stop the run, is athletic enough to get out in space. Like, that to me is where I think this game will be won or lost for Indiana. I think it is the sort of game I think UCLA will be better than what it was offensively against Hawaii, but I think we'll also be facing a substantially better defense. I think we're talking about an Indiana win to me if Indiana scores north of 28 points.
I think so as well.
If this turns into a slugfest, if this turns into a game where Indiana just can't move the ball, can't break free, then at very least, I think we get a test of Kurt Cignetti's sort of like I win lots of one score games pronouncement. At worst, I think maybe it's a low scoring UCLA win.
I think
it's also worth saying UCLA.
I think it's going to be a low scoring anything.
Again, if you are
that would be my
if
angle.
You are. If you are worried about the complacency aspect and things like that, you know, in the most basic terms, Indiana can lose this game and Indiana can afford to lose this game. It can lose this game and still beat, let's say, Charlotte and Maryland and come out of September 4-1, which we all said was an ideal sort of, you know, 5-0 was like dreamland. 4-1 was like, hey, you're still fine. Everything's, you know, you got all this momentum. Attack a big, important October. See if you can get to 6-7 wins. You're in a bowl game. Great. Indiana can afford to lose this game. I don't know if you've looked at UCLA's schedule. It's rough.
They're going to LSU next week.
They have, on
their own volition, they scheduled LSU.
They have but the middle chunk of their season is like, could go 0-5.
And that's why they're
1-5.
They might not be picked because of talent. They might be picked because of schedule to finish that deep in it. Well, Kurt Cignetti had a great point during media. He said, this is a team that's won 25 games the last 3 years.
3 bowl games, yeah.
Right. Something's happening there. Something's working. Deshaun Foster did not come from outside to fix this. He has been in. He was brought into this, promoted through it, and there was a story I saw.
And not a lot has changed. I know the offense has changed. Obviously, it's going to if Chip Kelly leaves, but
yes,
you know the defense has changed. A lot of the players retained because they made the internal hire. There has been a level of continuity you don't normally see when you have a head coaching change.
Hugely, and that was going to be my point. One of the new guys that they were interviewing I saw on their YouTube channel came from Navy, and he didn't really know Deshaun Foster. And they said, well, you know, how's that getting along? He said, well, when they came into the room and announced he'd be the new coach and everybody went crazy jumping up and down, he said, well, these guys must really like him. So that's an interesting aside there. But with Indiana, how are they going to get to 9 wins? Well, number one, they're going to have to avoid the injury bug. You've already told me their offensive line is one injury, maybe 1.5 injuries away from having to throw some guys into the deepest end of the deepest pool. And people say, well, why is that a big deal? You got these running backs and you got this quarterback. Well, you've told me this for years. You can only run what you can block. And if you have a hard time doing that, it doesn't matter how much experience Curtis Rourke has and how many carries these tailbacks have had. The offensive line is always a key. I think that's the biggest matchup in the UCLA game, and I think that has to be the biggest stabilizing factor moving forward.
And that's, again, where I say if this turns into a game where Indiana can get some points up, then I think it's a game Indiana wins. Because I think there's going to come a point in this game somewhere where Indiana's defensive style and UCLA's defensive style are just going to kind of bog down both offenses. And
then you're looking at a busted coverage, and then you're looking at penalties.
If I'm looking at the complexion of that Hawaii game, I'm saying UCLA looked fine in the second half. Not great. I mean, 13 points in 1 half against a bad team, even on the road.
16. It was 10-0 in the half.
Sorry. Yeah. That's good. It's not great. It's good. It's not explosive. It's, you know, if you scored 16 points every half, that's 32 points every game. You're probably going to win a lot of games. But they start really, really slow. They're very poor to begin the game. They have to get to halftime to shake some things out. Now, maybe they're going through their own process of that first half is just kind of washing a lot of the gremlins out of the system. And then that second half is more reflective of what they are offensively. But if you're Indiana and they do start slow, you have got to pounce on that. because I think this is also a UCLA team. You talk about UCLA as playing close. The flip side is, if I'm Indiana, I'd love to see how UCLA responds to playing from behind.
They did 10-0, came out in the
That's
second
fair.
Half, right? And they did it on the road, which is also interesting. How do we get to 9 wins? There's 12 games, right? 9 wins. You wrote the column about
it. No, I included the bowl game. I gave them the bowl game. 8-4.
Okay. So I
had them beating.
Where'd you have them losing? I don't care who they beat.
Northwest, all road games. Well, three road games in Michigan at home. Ohio State, Michigan.
What's the road game they win?
Michigan. This one. I had them winning this
okay.
one.
Okay. Not at Northwestern.
Huh? And my thought process was, well, I sort of split the difference on it. Well, basically.
Either or?
Yeah. Like I got to.
Because Northwestern's changing quarterbacks this week. They've gave it 2 weeks and said that.
So basically, my thought process on it was, I think Indiana's probably got the coaching matchup, like the coaching advantage, just because Deshaun Foster's a first-year head coach.
And the Indiana staff's been together for 8 years.
Yeah.
Right.
And Kurt Cignetti's, you know, had all the success he's had. I think Indiana probably has the better quarterback. And I don't think, you know, based on reputation anyway, and I've, you know, I'm not going to act like I've watched a ton of UCLA games, but talking to people who cover the Pac-12, who've been to UCLA games, who've been to the Rose Bowl in the regular season, I'm not convinced there's going to be a home atmosphere there
that will be disruptive.
That will level that out. And to me, if you have the better coaching situation, and I'm not even knocking Deshaun Foster. It's just like he's a first-year head coach. They have a brand new offensive coordinator. They have a new defensive coordinator that's running what they were running more or less a year ago, but still a new coordinator as opposed to a guy with a ton of experience, a staff with a lot of experience with him, and a lot of experience doing what we've already seen them achieve just in 2 weeks in Indiana, looking a lot like, you know, what Kurt Cignetti's reputation was at James Madison. To me, like, if you have that and then you have the better quarterback, and for the moment anyway, I don't think it's unreasonable to say Curtis Rourke is the better quarterback if you look at just the careers and the statistical production of the two, then there needs to be some massive leveling factor there. I don't think the crowd's going to be that. I think the defense is good. I won't act like I know all their personnel. I don't know that there is that one player that they've had in the past, that Anthony Barr.
Was drafted by the Colts last
year. You know, you're right. But that, ago. You know, that Anthony Barr, that Khalil Mack type, those guys both went to UCLA, right? And so
I think so.
The point is, you know, you hate to just completely reduce it, but that was pretty much my thought process. And I actually kind of thought that applied to UCLA, Northwestern. I wasn't so sure about Nebraska just because I didn't know what Dylan Raiola was going to be, because he's really highly regarded. Everyone thinks he's great. He's also a true freshman. But I thought it applied.
Rule knows what he's doing.
I thought it applied to Washington. I thought Michigan State was kind of a coin toss, and I thought it applied to Purdue. That if you ask those three questions, who's got the coaching advantage, who's got the quarterback advantage, who's got home field advantage, I thought you could make an argument that applied to that Indiana was better off in the UCLA game, the Northwestern game, the Maryland game, primarily because that game's at home.
Correct.
I have a lot of respect for Mike Locksley, looking what he's done the last 2-3 years. But the Maryland game's at home, the Washington game, possibly the Nebraska game, or maybe I didn't say the Northwestern game, and the Purdue game. And I basically just sort of said, I don't think that they will go 6-0. I don't think that they will – or 7-0, rather. I don't think they will, you know, I don't think they will run the table with the 7, not Ohio State, Michigan games. But I think you can make a compelling case that, at least on paper, they could have the majority of those three factors in their favor in almost any of those games. Maybe not Nebraska, maybe not Michigan State. But even then, you knock it down to 9 or 5, well, 3 of those 5 are at home.
It just goes to show, folks, how important the quarterback position is.
Yes.
Not only in college football, in professional football, just about everywhere. Why? Handles the ball every time. Indiana's quarterback history recently has not been good. How does Indiana keep the quarterback alive? Well, they have to block up front. It all
and they
gotta
run the ball.
That's where the run game is important.
If you've got an athletic defense that's gonna want to attack you, you got to pin them back, not necessarily the explosive runs, although it is worth saying through 2 weeks, Indiana's got the most explosive runs in the Big Ten, runs at 10-plus yards. Not necessarily the explosive runs, but it's 2nd and 6. It's 3rd and 1. It's 2nd and 4. It's It's, you know, it's being able to rush for a first down and
it's being able
snaps.
To have the playbook wide open and not being condemned to third and eight.
It's forcing UCLA to not just be able to trust the potential size and athletic advantages it has, and to say we got to bring more players down in here. We can't beat them with our base stuff. They're running the ball against our base stuff. So we've got to start adding exotic pressures. We've got to start bringing an extra hat down into the box. Well, suddenly that means you've got Elijah Surratt and, you know, if he's healthy, Donovan McCulley, both in one-on-one coverage. So now you can do something else.
And that's something else. Well, first of all, you got to go on the road to UCLA. First time ever in the Rose Bowl for, well, this generation of Hoosiers. A lot of fans, too. 7:30 on NBC. 6:30, the tailgate right here on WGCL. Osterman will be back tomorrow. We'll get into the Indiana basketball news of the day, the other Big Ten news going on. Any dog in the fight, Buffalo, Miami, or are you just waiting for the Falcons on the weekend?
I'm not waiting for the Falcons.
You haven't been waiting all day for Sunday, huh?
No.
We'll have some fun with that. We'll come back tomorrow. Big show Friday. Joe Smith will have all of our high school football previews for the rivalry games. We'll get you the whole Big Ten slate, NFL slate, all the Colts news, all the Hoosier news. And then, obviously, Kurt Cignetti will be on the air tonight. Anything that he talks about, interestingly, Zach and I will talk about in the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour tomorrow. Go South Volleyball. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great night. Your Money with David Hayes is next. Friday. Big show. Friday. Ooh, Friday the 13th. Terrifying. Who better than to calm us down and lead us to safety? Let's hide behind the chainsaws. No, that's not a good idea. Instead, we find our great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. He joins us every Thursday and Friday afternoon to make sure you're caught up on all things Indiana football and basketball. And let's start with the hoops today. We did a lot of football yesterday, and we'll get to that before we're out of time here today. But hooping, more games leaking out slowly but surely, and Indiana basketball. Now we have our first two, it appears, Big Ten opponents of the season. And just for a little bit more mouth-watering stuff, the Purdue series was leaked out today. That John Rothstein, he's a leaky guy. He gets it all out there.
Yeah, I don't – and I'm not knocking Rothstein at all. I don't really know where the schedule is if – like, if dates are kind of being confirmed, then that tells me the schedule's ready, because you can't do one team's schedule, then the next team's schedule, then the next team's schedule, and so on. It all has to kind of be done together so that you can spot conflicts and things like that. If you only do them one at a time, you know, you'll eventually get to a place where nobody can fill a certain date. You have to revise them all anyway. Anyway, my point is,
release the hounds!
Yeah, if the schedule is as complete as it appears to be, I am surprised it's not out. What I suspect that signals is, and you know this, how this works as well as I do, with the different TV partners, basically what will happen is everyone will get a certain number of first picks, a certain number of second picks, and so on. You'll kind of work your way through, Fox will get 10 first choice selections for midweek primetime games, and then Peacock will go second, and then, you know, CBS Sports or whatever will go third. I don't know what the exact details are. I don't think CBS Sports is getting midweek games, but you understand my point.
Right.
I'm guessing these games are scheduled.
You just don't think the TV is filled yet. So just give us the schedule. Let's just do that.
What they're working out is as much of the TV as they can. There will always be a little bit that won't be determined until game week. But I think they're working out what of the TV piece of it they can. And in the meantime, obviously, yes, things are kind of being drip fed. But I would suspect we'll see the schedule within the next week. Maybe 2 weeks. But I just think all this tells me that they've got the schedule. They've just got to nail down some details to finish it off.
100%. And here we are, week 3 of college football. We know Indiana UCLA is the only Big Ten matchup, but it is the coast-to-coast first-time Big Ten matchup. If they would have really wanted to have some fun, they could have announced it at halftime of Indiana-UCLA. They're not going to do that. So football is going to take the weekends, and then basketball will fill us up in the midweek. So I would think, what, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, this all pops out of the oven. They try to do it pretty smartly.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And like we know, the dates are done. And I don't think even fans care about really TV, perhaps. But you got to have TV to have time. So that's why this is interesting.
Right. You got to satisfy all the TV contracts. Again, the way these things tend to work is everybody gets a certain number of selections and a certain number of slots. Everybody gets, you know, CBS is going to get a certain number of Sunday slots where it gets to pick first, because CBS obviously has kind of the more slightly more exclusive deal in the sense that they have the big Saturday football game and then the weekend basketball game that we know they often do on Sundays during basketball season. But the point is, it's got to go kind of around the houses a couple times before everything is kind of claimed and everything is settled as can be. And that's not to say that every single TV designation will be confirmed and announced, but most of them should be.
Getting closer. It's hoop season. And we know the 20-game Big Ten schedule. Well, we always try to fill in the gaps of that because we know in December, Indiana's non-conference schedule was filled up, and we had the wonderful gap of Friday, December 6th through Saturday. I believe that's, what, the 18th or 19th? I don't have the calendar just in front of me right now. But we knew in that 13-day window, Indiana had finals during this time, so that kind of narrowed down our choices of when those first games of basketball were going to be for the Big Ten, the two-play, as I like to call it, before they get to the old regular 18-game season after the new year.
That's pretty much it. It was a question of obviously when specifically those games would be and where they, you know, how they'd move those around, but I think we've got those answers, it seems like, anyway. And now it's going to be a question of kind of how the rest of it shakes out.
Well, we're just doing process of elimination. If we know we play these teams at home and these teams away and these teams in a double play, starting the Big Ten season home Minnesota at Nebraska isn't the heaviest lifting I've ever seen. How does that translate? And I know we haven't seen Indiana play, and I know they've got six or seven new guys. But if you told me that's the schedule, and it is, I'm not screaming mad into the night, even though it is Friday the 13th.
now you've given me a mental image I can't get around.
The running part or the screaming part?
Well, probably a little bit of both.
Oh, there you go.
My mind's just gone completely blank. All I can see is Mike Glasgow running and screaming because it's Friday the 13th.
Well, it is. But on December the 13th, we'll be playing basketball in Lincoln. And December the 9th, we'll be playing basketball at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Those aren't two teams that are ranked first and second in the Big Ten. So kind of dipping your toe in there after a, I don't want to say laborious November, but there's a little work to do down there in the Bahamas. Not a bad start for the conference play.
No, although, I mean, I would point out, I think Nebraska won those three games last year by like a combined, like a 19 points per game, something like that, not combined, but an average of like 19 points per game. I mean, that's, you know, obviously Tominaga's gone, but there's still some pieces there. There's still some, I mean, that's still, I think, going to be a tricky game. On the other hand, Minnesota, I mean, you know, listen, we picked Minnesota to finish last in the conference last season, and they flirted with getting onto the bubble. But, you know, the flip side is a lot of the guys that Minnesota counted on last season outside of Dawson Garcia are gone. You've got, I think, Peyton Willis transferred, Pharrell Payne transferred.
The guard transferred.
Yeah, Max Christie's brother, who's Cam Christie. Is that who it is? Cam Christie?
Yeah.
Didn't he go into the draft? So the point is, like,
The point guard went to Texas Tech.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Ben Johnson proved everybody wrong last year, so give him some benefit of the doubt. But that could very well be the kind of game that Indiana's not unhappy to see on the schedule to kind of, because that comes before the Nebraska game. That's your Big Ten opener. So at very least, I don't know how much better of a Big Ten opener you could have gotten than that.
Yeah, at home, it's a Monday as well, and they will play Miami of Ohio on the 6th, which is a Friday. So Friday, the 6th and the 13th of December, and then Saturday to end the month. You've got finals squeezed in there as well. Obviously, the Christmas holiday. And now we know the two games for the Boilermakers series. So if you're marking your calendars and or putting it in your Palm Pilot or however we do that in this day and age, John Rothstein reports that Indiana will head to Mackey Arena on the final day of January, January 31st. And a quick calendar check tells me that January 31st is a Friday night. How about that? And the return leg.
Can I please have a Saturday noon tip in West Lafayette sometime soon? I've had a lot of late drives home from West Lafayette lately.
Not on a Friday night. You will not get one of those. But you'll get a Sunday home game with the Boilermakers on February 23rd. So imagine a world, and we can always have fun with this because we all want it to go back to the old days and everything else, but Friday night, Indiana-Purdue, and then Sunday, Indiana-Purdue. Well, you're right. How about one of the most storied rivalries in college basketball? Can't even get a Saturday. I don't care if it's noon or 9 p.m., but not even a Saturday game for its fan base. My goodness. And last year, were both the games on Peacock or just one? So if you're going to be moaning about that, you might as well get it out of your system and get everybody a Christmas gift in your family for Peacock if they don't have it.
I'm looking while we're talking. I think they were both on Peacock.
So okay. Do I. That's how, you know, that, and let's
look at shows on KenPom anymore, but.
You can go to iuhoosiers.com. It'll show it.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that.
Okay. I'll give it
the on-air admin while we're talking.
I'll yell at you about the Peacock side of it and everything else. But people have to realize, and you painted this picture right when we got started, Zach Osterman and Indy Star. The TV guys make these decisions, and they do so because they want return on their investment. You think stuff's expensive now. Well, if they're not making any money on this, then there are no sports to watch on TV. So let's be clear on that. Yes, we all have to acquiesce at some point.
Purdue was on Big Fox.
Big Fox, okay.
It was a Saturday night game.
Oh, that was a big Saturday night. Okay, Big Fox game. Okay. But the other one was Peacock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew one of them was for sure. So we've already been here. We've already done that. And if you're going to start paying players, guess where this money is going to come from? Yes, your TV providers. So that's how it's going to work. So in December, December 9th, Monday, home Big Ten opener. The Golden Gophers are in town. Then the Friday of that work week, Indiana will head to Lincoln and take on the Fighting Fred Hoibergs at whatever bank arena that is in Lincoln. Then the final day of January, to Mackey, and the 23rd of February, home for the Boilermakers. So those are the four of our 20. It's still a 20, even though we have 18 teams, it's still a 20-game schedule.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth on this, like how much the competitive imbalance is going to hurt here. Because, I mean, we were already at a point where you would, I mean, where if we were looking at like the large numbers and sort of taking things in the zoomed out way, it pretty consistently felt like the Big Ten title race was influenced heavily by who you played. And that's including years when I think Indiana played the second softest Big Ten schedule in 2016, according to KenPom, if memory serves. I think behind only Michigan State, or maybe it was vice versa. And the one difficulty with that is always that the top team in the conference can't play itself. So it's always going to have a slightly depressed strength of schedule. But Indiana was 13th that season. The next year, five of the top six teams in the conference had double digit strength of schedules. This is all per KenPom. Same the year after that, 5 of 6. The top four the year after that had double-digit strength of schedules. Michigan State, when they won it in 20, obviously that was the COVID season, or the season that got shut down by COVID. They had the 12th toughest schedule. The year after that, the top four teams each have double-digit schedule difficulties. You know, the only time, if you want to go back as far as 2015, which is 10 years, the only time that KenPom has a Big Ten champion, or at least co-champion, that had a single-digit strength of conference strength of schedule and won at least a share of the conference was Illinois in 22. They shared it with Wisconsin. They had the fifth toughest schedule in the league. My point is, it already has felt like scheduling created a certain amount of competitive imbalance, and I think this is only going to deepen that. The trouble is, obviously, I think you are going to reach a point where enough is too much with, you know, can you go to 22 conference games or 24 conference games? I think your schools are going to push back on that. There's even an extent to which your television folks are going to push back on that because they're going to like the extra conference revenue, but they're also going to like the idea that every once in a while they're going to get a hold of an IU Kansas or they're going to get a hold of a Michigan State North Carolina. And they're not going to want the conference to become such a gauntlet that schools stop scheduling those non-conference games. So every year I feel like I go back and forth on this a little bit in terms of how to sort of redress this, I guess, because there isn't a perfect way to do it. And because there will always be an extent, frankly, to which, you know, luck or good fortune plays a part in the way a season plays out. Again, go back to that 2016 season with Indiana. You know, I think so much of that Big Ten season is defined by the fact that Indiana opens conference play 7-0, and the only one of the teams in that entire stretch that Indiana plays that wind up in the NCAA tournament is Wisconsin at home. So they go to a really bad Rutgers team. They go to a bad Nebraska team. They squeeze by Wisconsin by one at home. And then their next four games are all against teams that missed the tournament that year too. This will always be part of it. It's sort of figuring out how to mitigate for it where you can. And I'm just not sure what the answer is when the conference keeps getting bigger. And I do think there reaches a point where there's almost just too much critical mass to start saying, well, we're going to play 22, we're going to play 24, we're going to play 25 conference games. I just don't think that works.
The other part of that is if you're asking us to pay all the student athletes and you're increasing our travel X-fold, that doesn't jive, does it?
No. And right now my understanding is that the expectation will be basically you have two West Coast games if you're any of the initial 14 Big Ten schools. I think basically what they're trying to do with just about everyone they can, and I obviously haven't seen the full schedule, so I can't tell you that they achieved this with everyone, but I think what the goal is to basically send everybody on one West Coast trip every year. So like Indiana plays Oregon and Washington on the road this year, they would play both of those games, you know, in one trip. They play like a weekend.
You have to.
A Tuesday, something like that. You know, it's weirdly tricky in one way because it's kind of all or nothing. I think the conference is probably going to want to keep Oregon and Washington together and then the LA schools together as schedule pairs because, I mean, like the flight time from Seattle to LAX is still like 7 hours or 6 hours or something like that. So, like, that's not exactly making it a heck of a lot easier, if you know what I mean. But then that means that you're going to either A, just get to go to LA and probably just, you know, camp out for 5 days, 6 days, or in your off years, you're going to have to fly to SeaTac. You're going to play a game in Seattle. Then you're going to fly down to Eugene. You're going to play a game there. And then you got to fly home. So even those trips aren't necessarily created equal. But I think that's the way the Big Ten is trying to handle it for now is whenever you go play your West Coast teams, you play them at the same time and then you kind of kick them back. And obviously the West Coast teams, it's going to be, you know, a whole different kind of challenge, but you know, that is what it is.
It is what it is. And one of those challenges will be this week. Indiana football heads to UCLA. I believe the flight leaves, just here in the next hour or so from Indianapolis International Airport into LAX. They go up to Pasadena. My favorite part of that, hearing Kurt Cignetti talk about the itinerary last night was the guesstimate of only needing an hour and 20 minutes from LAX to Pasadena. I hope that's a motorcade they've got going with them because that traffic in Los Angeles will be a little tasty on a on a Friday. The lines I've been following all week, it looks like it has swung back. Indiana's now a 2.5-point favorite. That'll probably move again and again. Doesn't seem like anybody has a clear vision on this. The only clear vision I've seen, Mr. Osterman, is a quick perusal of all the fanzines and fan websites. I have not seen one prediction for UCLA. And you know what that means, don't you? When everybody's on one side, holy cow, as much as I hate to say it, I might just have to drift to the other side of the street. Now, I know that's not how you look at games or anybody else, but there hasn't been one person that has predicted Indiana to lose this game. That is an amazing statement after the last, I don't want to know, how many years you want to go back? You want to go back to the Mallory era? Yeah. I mean, Indiana, a guaranteed road victory for Indiana on the road across country, first time on the road with this coaching staff. That is an amazing stretch for me.
No, I mean, it does feel like it's kind of getting into that dangerous, like it's not an upset anymore.
And then we'll all be upset when it happens.
Yeah. I mean, it is reflective of also, I think, small sample sizes, right? I mean, we've only seen UCLA play four quarters. We've only seen Indiana play eight. So it's hard to know. It's hard to make sort of overly informed decisions, essentially, if you understand what I'm saying. But we talked a lot about it. You know, yesterday we talked a lot about it in the show yesterday. Like, there's some challenges for Indiana, but there are also some pretty significant challenges for UCLA. Like, I understand anybody that looks at this game and says they think IU should win. And just to be honest, like, you know, Indiana has looked sharper. It's looked, I mean, I don't want to say more confident because I don't want to tell you what guys are thinking or feeling, but it has looked more authoritative. I think that, you know, some of this is a reflection of belief in Kurt Cignetti, but I think that belief is justified. So, I mean, it's tough to say for sure. It does, you know, what it means when everyone's – well, the thing is, it's weird because it's not the old Bill Simmons rule about how if everybody picks an upset, it no longer becomes an upset and you should bet on the team everyone's picking against, because Indiana's favored. So everyone's just kind of following Vegas here. I mean, Vegas opened with Indiana favored, and that hasn't changed all week. Obviously, it's close. You know, I mean, the last time I saw it, it was -3. I would point out that is even factoring for the idea that UCLA's at home. So – you know, I mean, Vegas, just depending on like who you talk to, what sports book, how people set odds, home field advantage can be good for what, 4, 5, 6 points at times. So in some respects, this is Vegas almost saying, you know, if this game, to Kurt Cignetti's quote earlier in the week, was literally played in a parking lot, then UCLA would probably be a bigger underdog, probably be 6, 7, 8 points. And then everybody picking Indiana, it's like, well, yeah, I mean, they're predicted to win by at least a full touchdown. So, you know, you kind of get it. I mean, I think Cignetti's point was really valid, and we talked about this yesterday. UCLA's done a lot more winning than Indiana has in the last 3 years. And until Indiana proves that it can manage that, then I don't think Cignetti's interested in the idea of being, you know, favored over a team like UCLA.
Coming up on Saturday night around 11:30 or so, because most college games are 4 hours now, aren't they? We'll have an overreaction one way or the other, won't we?
Possibly. I mean, the thing I would point out is if Indiana wins, then I don't think it's going to be remotely sort of, you know, I think everyone's going to look at it and say, well, then Indiana's going to get to 4-0. And then all you've got to do is win 2 of your last 8 games and you're bowl eligible.
That would be the very measured take. I'm talking about the hot take department. Now we're getting into 9 wins. Getting into 10 wins.
I'm not sure. I don't know how many serious people will go that far, you know, throw their caps that far over the wall. But I think people would look at it and justifiably say if Indiana wins this game, then at minimum Indiana should probably be able to beat Maryland at home, should maybe be able to beat Purdue at home, should maybe be able to beat Northwestern on the road. My point is, if Indiana can win this game, I think you have every reason to believe Indiana can win enough further games, home and even road, to potentially get to, you know, 7 wins, maybe even 8 wins.
Just get to a bowl game. The rest of it's gravy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that is, I think that is fair. But I think Cignetti's aim is clearly higher, and I think his players are following suit. And I think if you can win a game like this, then I think you have every right to
dream a little bit.
Let's say, as an Indiana fan, I guess. I mean, not like, you know, reporters got to look at it a little bit differently. That's what I was trying to say. But I think if Indiana wins this game, I think you have every right as an Indiana fan to say, hey, then maybe we can win 7, maybe even 8. You know, that this can be a team that has a real sort of surprise season.
And I don't think that's ridiculous. The transitive properties flying around. Well, look what UCLA did at Hawaii, and look, you know, Michigan State won at Maryland, and we can go on and on and on. Kurt Cignetti's right. It's one game. It's the most important game, and it's a game that'll be played tomorrow night, 7:30. The Rose Bowl, NBC, Hoosiers and Bruins. Hey, come back next week. We'll have a little fun before the 49ers come to town. Not those 49ers, the Charlotte 49ers. And we'll recap everything that's going on. And we'll probably have a Big Ten schedule of basketball to talk about as well.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, as always.
That is my great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, at Zach Osterman on the X, IndyStar.com. Please support local journalism. We beg you, so we can have these great stories about our local athletes as well. All right, stay tuned. After a quick JR Sport Brief, we will head to Dennis O. Martin Memorial Field. The North and South rivalry continues. 6:20, the Commissioner's Corner. We will then hear from North head coach Anthony Lindsay and South head coach Gabe Johnson before the Battle of the City here in week number 4. Joe Smith and Dave Novak will have all the action. Tune in with us tomorrow, 11:30, for a noon kickoff. It's Alabama and Wisconsin from Madison. That's our big radio game for Saturday. And then, of course, 1 hour before Indiana and UCLA tangle in the Rose Bowl, the tailgate. Joe Smith and I break down all of the Indiana-UCLA angles for hopefully a 3-0 start for your Hoosiers, a first Big Ten win, a first Big Ten road win, and the first time the Hoosiers in the Rose Bowl since 1968. Have a fantastic Friday. We'll be back on Monday to recap it all. The Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour is over.